Welcome to Courtside, everyone, a discussion of legal issues, and ideally legal issues that don't involve Donald J. Trump. It's a beautiful snowy day here in Washington. I got to spend some of it shoveling, and I was psyched to do a fully non-Trump episode and spent a bunch of yesterday planning it out. I was excited to tell you all about Fred Korematsu Day and about Marjorie Taylor Greene. But then Trump came back in. As Wycliffe says, every time I keep pulling out, y'all keep pulling me back in. Yes, last night it was revealed that all five of Donald Trump's lawyers on impeachment quit. His trial is next week. So you know the beginning of the heist movie where they introduce all the characters and their special skills? Well, Donald Trump's legal team yesterday looked a bit like that, except instead of characters, they just are all cartoons. And instead of special skills, there are, I guess, disbarment proceedings. So all five of his lawyers on impeachment, Butch Bowers, Deborah Barbier, Josh Howard, Johnny Gasser, and Greg Harris, have all left his legal team. So he now has two new lawyers, one of whom is Bruce Castor. And Bruce Castor, it was just revealed a few moments ago, literally as I was recording this, he joined a law firm in December, and that law firm happened to sue Donald Trump. And here's an excerpt from the lawsuit filed by Mr. Castor's law firm. Quote, these actions arise in an environment who are subject to repeated claims by President Donald J. Trump that voting by mail is ripe with fraud, despite having no evidence in support of these claims and lawsuits filed by the Trump campaign to stop mail-in voting in states such as Nevada and Pennsylvania. Nonetheless, these five lawyers yesterday evidently quit because Trump wants to argue in his defense to impeachment that the election was stolen. That's, of course, not a defense of his conduct. That's an admission of his guilt. He's just saying the violence was justified. And it's also an admission of Trump's cuckoo nature. Maybe it can set up an insanity defense for him in future criminal proceedings or something like that. But Donald Trump losing his entire legal team provides one of those rare moments that I wish we really did have his Twitter account back. You know, we now just have to turn on caps lock and tweet a full-blown crazy conspiracy theory for ourselves. And you gotta wonder if you're one of these five lawyers. Already, 45 Republicans last week signaled support for the nutso theory that a president who's left office can't be impeached and convicted. So this wasn't like the heaviest lift for his lawyers, unless, of course, there's stuff we don't know. Now, I think this whole you can't impeach a former president thing is bogus. But look, if a former official truly can't be barred through impeachment for future office holding, then that just is going to make the criminal prosecution of Mr. Trump a necessity. I mean, the founders, after all, were all concerned about checks and balances, and they always said for every right there is a remedy. And it can't be that Donald Trump, A, can't be impeached for Ukraine because Americans had to wait for the election, and B, Trump can't be impeached for January 6th because he's soon going to be out of office, and C, he can't be prosecuted while he's a sitting president, and D, he can't be prosecuted afterwards for his actions while president. At some point, our entire constitutional structure is all about the idea that Trump has to face a real tribunal. Well, speaking of real tribunals, I want to spend today talking about two things. The first is your favorite member of Congress, Marjorie Taylor Greene. Now, this person is truly cocoa for Cocoa Puffs. Here's how NPR summarizes it. Marjorie Taylor Greene has, quote, denied that a plane hit the Pentagon on September 11th, supported the idea that the Parkland school shooting was a false flag operation meant to usher in tighter gun laws, seems to agree that Hillary Clinton was recorded filleting a child's face. Taylor Greene suggested the 2018 California wildfires may not have been due to climate change, leaving vegetation drier and more combustible. No, she instead advanced the theory that there was some kind of space laser that hit things on fire. Indeed, she claimed that Jewish space, her claims led the phrase Jewish space lasers to trend on Twitter. Meanwhile, the Space Force is just grateful. It sounds like a serious enterprise by comparison. And allegations about her calls to violence are even worse. This is how CNN puts it. In January 2019, Green liked a comment that she said a bullet to the head would be quicker to remove House Speaker Nancy Pelosi. In other posts, Green liked comments about executing FBI agents who were part of the deep state. She also wrote conspiratorially about the Iran deal, one of former President Obama's signature foreign policy achievements. A commentator asked Green, "Now do we get to hang them?" meaning H and O, referring to Obama and Hillary Clinton. Green replied, quote, "Stage is being set. Players are being put in place. We must be patient. This must be done perfectly or liberal judges would let them off." And as I mentioned a moment ago, she claimed that the Parkland shooting was a false flag operation made to whip up support for gun control. CNN has even reported that she called David Hogg, who's a survivor and activist, Little Hitler, and spread a conspiracy theory that he was a bought and paid little pawn. Now, to be fair, Taylor Green denies some of these statements, saying they were done by her staff. I don't know. I mean, many of the crazy ones that you hear about are actually her own videos. But look, let's be truly fair. A defense like, "I didn't tweet those crazy things, my paid staff did it," is a better defense than I suspect what we'll hear from Donald Trump next week in his impeachment proceedings. Marjorie Taylor is the craziest member of Congress we've had by a mile. And that's really saying something when you got people like Louis Gohmert. But that's, of course, unless you watch Fox News, in which case the title for craziest member of Congress goes to AOC and her socialist conspiracy to, I don't know, give you health care. The Republicans keep on rewarding Marjorie Taylor Greene nonetheless. I kid you not. She was just awarded a coveted seat on the Education and Labor Commission. Education and Labor Committee. And what do we hear from the Republican Party about that? What kind of criticism? Crickets. Except, of course, for the perennially decent Mitt Romney, who said she was, quote, talking nonsense. Mitt Romney has come a long way from binders full of women to now binders full of Twitter burns. But that's basically it. Mitt Romney, what happened to the party of Reagan? It's truly becoming the Green Party. So what to do about it? Well, I advance this with some hesitation because I don't like the idea of throwing out members of Congress. But I do think it's time for an investigation and proceedings to begin. So here's the deal. There are two ways to do this. Article 1, Section 5 of our Constitution says, quote, "Each House of Congress may determine the rules of its proceedings, punish members for disorderly behavior, and with the concurrence of 2/3, expel a member." So 2/3, that's what it would take under this theory. And if Democrats held firm, and normally, of course, they're like jello, but if they did hold firm on something like this, it would need 69 Republicans in order to expel her. There's also a separate possibility of using the 14th Amendment, which, as we talked about before, provides for exclusion from office holding for those, quote, who shall have engaged in insurrection or rebellion or given aid or comfort to enemies thereof. Now, that may require just a simple majority vote of Congress to the House to pass that legislation, but it would also probably something that would require a trial before a court. And look, I think one of these mechanisms should be used. I mean, and every member of Congress should be forced to vote on this. Do they stand for this, as Mitt Romney calls it, nonsense? And we should welcome a judicial proceeding over this. Let's have a trial. Let's have her present all the evidence in her defense about how there are space lasers that have caused the wildfires and, you know, all this other cuckoo nonsense. This is not someone who strikes me as deserving of an honorific, like being a member of Congress, but let's have that all out. Let's have out what she did on January 6th. Okay. I also want to spend some time today on something non-news cycle related. Yesterday, as I said, was Fred Korematsu Day. And I want to spend a bit of time today on that Japanese American internment and on some stories that I don't think most of you know. Because Fred Korematsu was a true American hero, and many of you know his stories. But I want to tell you about a much more, in many ways, interesting, much less known story about a guy named Gordon Hirabayashi. So we had the bombings in World War II in Pearl Harbor, which of course kicked off World War II on December 7th, 1941. And afterwards, the United States imposed all sorts of restrictions on Japanese Americans through FDR and his orders to the United States Army. And One of those restrictions was a curfew and ultimately the internment of over 100,000 Japanese Americans. And these are people who literally never set foot in Japan, many of them. They were born here. They were United States citizens. But nonetheless, over 100,000 of them were mass interned based on nothing more than the color of their skin. So there were a few brave citizens who wanted to challenge that. Fred Korematsu is one. And I want to tell you about Gordon Hirabayashi. He's an 18-year-old student at the University of Washington. And he was raised like a Quaker. And he saw this order, thought it was unconstitutional, and goes and defies it. He goes and stays out, blows off curfew, blows off these movement restrictions and so on that were imposed on Japanese Americans. And he goes and he turns himself into the FBI. And he says, I'm Gordon Hirabayashi. I broke all these rules. Please arrest me. They say, is this your first offense? He says, yes. They say, go home. No big deal. Just don't do it again. He says, nope, I'm a Quaker. My duty is to resist unjust laws. I need you to arrest me. So like, okay. So they arrest him and they put him on trial. And Gordon defended himself at trial. And when he lost, the judge says to him, I've got bad news and good news. The bad news is you've been sentenced to a prison camp. The good news is the closest prison camp is 1,000 miles away in Tucson, Arizona. And Mr. Hirabayashi, we are fighting a war and we don't have the resources to get you down there. Gordon says, don't worry, Judge, I'll get there myself. And Gordon goes and hitchhikes the 1,000 miles from Seattle all the way down to Tucson to serve his sentence. That's the kind of man he was. He believed he had been sentenced, even though he didn't think the sentence was constitutional. He thought it was his patriotic duty to serve his sentence. So he gets down to the prison camp and arrives, and it's late at night. And the warden said, he goes and they say, we have no record of you. That's what the warden says to him. You know, and Gordon says, no, I'm here. I'm supposed to serve my sentence. He says, I have no record of you. Don't worry. You don't have to serve your sentence. You can go home. Gordon goes through the whole thing again. I'm a Quaker. I've got to serve my sentence and so on. The warden says, okay, come back in the morning. They figure it out and he starts serving his sentence. That's the kind of man he was. Now, in the United States at the time, then as now, the Solicitor General at the Justice Department decides all appeals. And I had the honor of serving in that capacity in the Obama administration. And during World War II, the Solicitor General was a guy named Charles Fahey. And when his office was drafting the appeals papers defending Hirabayashi's treatment, a subordinate lawyer, a guy named Edward Ennis, found out about a Navy report that totally contradicted the entire rationale for the Japanese-American restrictions, internment, and the like. The report, this is from the Navy, says, quote, the entire Japanese problem has been magnified out of its true proportions, largely because of the physical characteristics of the people. And J. Edgar Hoover, no fan of civil liberties, agreed with this Navy report. So in light of this report, Ennis writes to the Solicitor General saying that the Justice Department has to, quote, consider most carefully what our obligation to the court is. I think we should consider very carefully whether we do not have a duty to advise the Supreme Court of the existence of this Navy report. It occurs to me that any other course of conduct might approximate the suppression of evidence. Suppression of evidence. That's all in these memos. What does Ennis do, the Solicitor General? Excuse me, what does Fahey do, Solicitor General? Nothing. Instead, he orders his deputy to double down on statistics in the brief, claiming mass internment was necessary. There's no mention of this Navy report in the brief to the Supreme Court. Instead, there's 15 pages of stuff about the, quote, racial characteristics of Japanese Americans that made them supposedly untrustworthy. And so the Supreme Court of the United States upheld Gordon Hirabayashi's treatment. We could blame the Supreme Court, but their decision was the product of the intelligence information that the Solicitor General and the Justice Department gave them. And the court doubled down on their holding months later in the Korematsu case, saying that the government was justified in interning these Japanese Americans. No one told the Supreme Court the truth. Now, nearly 70 years later, when I held the same office as Fahey, I got to set the record straight. We acknowledge the existence of the report, and admitted error for failing to bring the report to the attention of the Supreme Court. It was decades late for Gordon Hirabayashi and others, but the system finally did right itself, and Gordon posthumously was awarded the Presidential Medal of Freedom by President Obama. But this took 70 years, and Korematsu, that case, and Hirabayashi stood at as the law of the land until actually the Muslim ban case that I mentioned before that I got to argue at the Supreme Court a couple of years ago. And on a prior court side, I talked about that case and the heartbreaking 5-4 loss in it. But there was that one bright spot. The Supreme Court went out of its way to repudiate the Korematsu decision. And I'm going to leave you today with that bright spot, because as dark as the days are right now with coronavirus, there is brightness on the horizon. I'll see you next Sunday.